Hello and welcome to Two Blokes Trading. Join us, the two blokes, New Tom, and as of yet, to be decided bloke number two, as we dive deep into the complex, exciting, and potentially lucrative world of home trading. This week's episode is brought to you by Bizintra Trading Academy. For those of you who don't know, Bizintra Trading Academy are providing online courses and they're currently doing sponsorships. So you can actually learn how to trade for free by just simply having a real trading account with one of their partnered brokers. Be sure to check them out at bizintra.com/two blokes. That is T-W-O. These guys have courses for all ranges of traders, whether you've been literally looking at it for the past couple weeks and never even taken a trade, or if you've been trading for the last 5 years, these guys will have something for you. So be sure to check them out, bizintra.com/two blokes, T-W-O. Blokes. Howdy, 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 and welcome to today's episode of the Two Blokes Trading Podcast. On this week's episode 113, I have the absolute pleasure of speaking with Jared Murray. Jared has, I think it's about 12 years experience when it comes to trading the likes of gas and oil, and has a lot of experience and knowledge on the topic. It was great to get some pearls of wisdom of, you know, his own trading experiences and even the future of what's to come kind of for oil and just renewable energy. So I really hope you guys enjoy. Thank you for tuning in. All right, ladies and gentlemen and Two Blokes listeners, welcome to today's episode of Two Blokes Trading Podcast. I am really excited to welcome today's guest. It is Jared Murray. Now, yeah, before we kind of delve into it, do you prefer being called Jared?
Yeah, Jared's perfect, yeah.
Jared's good. All right, excellent. Yeah. Basically, I'd love for you just to actually even introduce yourself, you know, to the Two Blokes listeners and give just, you know, let's say 90 seconds, talk about where you are from when you began kind of trading to who you are now.
Sure. Listen, thanks for having me on and for giving me a chance to have a chat with you guys. I guess for me, I started trading, it kind of came off the back of having an interest in engineering, and I guess my family worked in the oil and gas industry and they had some links to small cap oil and gas resource companies.
Out of curiosity, yeah, to what kind of capacity were they involved in that industry?
My uncles were directors in an oil company, Irish oil companies, and then they were shareholders. I guess from a young age, I started to go to AGMs and EGMs, and like that was kind of my first introduction to the oil and gas industry. And I think that's kind of how I fell into trading in a way, in that I don't know if people might be familiar with this or not, but it's a strange industry in that it's huge, but it's got a tiny door to get into, you know, quite close, and hard to get an understanding of what it is. And I came from kind of an engineering background, and my whole thing on it was I'd love to get into the industry and try and, I guess, learn about all the operational side of it, the drilling side. And that was the first step. I know it sounds a bit convoluted and how did you get to trading from there, but it was more of an interest and a passion from oil and gas industry that led me to kind of get an understanding on how the day-to-day runnings of a company work and how the operational aspects of it work. And that kind of led me on then to start investing in the kind of smaller oil cap companies. I think I was about 17 or 18 when I started, and I'm 32 now.
Awesome.
That's kind of how it all started.
Awesome, Jer. And when it comes to, I guess, very specific trades, because you mentioned that, you've been doing that since you were, 18, 19, was it?
Yeah, about 17, 18.
17, 18. Awesome. And have you always just gone into oil and gas?
You know, it's actually, I'd say 99% of my of everything is oil and gas. I've actually tried. I've gone outside the industry and I've looked at mining and some tech companies. But I think ultimately, when you kind of take a position and you're very comfortable with the material and the research and what you're doing, I just find it slightly unsettling when I don't understand the fundamentals of a business properly. So I've always just tended to lean towards the exploration side, oil and gas, because it's what I know. That's not to say that you could understand why others don't do it. Like, I mean, I know a few guys who technical trade and, you know, day trade, they come in and out. But for the setup that I use and the way my strategy, I kind of prefer to stick to what I know in depth.
Of course, of course. Basically, Jer, I'd love to know how you trade, as in the style of trading that you do. You know, what would you be kind of, what strategy are you using on a daily basis or weekly, monthly, yearly? Like,
yeah, well, typically what I look for is I look for companies that are, I guess, not in a news rich period. So when it's very quiet, when, you know, possibly in 6 to 8 to 10 months, they're going to move into a phase of drilling or development or appraisal when, you know, there's expected news. So generally when I open a position or take a position in a company, it's very quiet. There's very little talk in the chat rooms. There's, you know, there's probably negative sentiment in that, you know, there's very little happening. But ultimately it's a case of just sitting and waiting for the position to build, for the market to come to it. And then as drilling is announced and plans and, you know, potential farm-ins come into play, the price actually just naturally moves. And you'll normally get maybe a kind of anywhere between a 25 to 50% rise in share price up to that point. And then you kind of start to see the market comes into it, the chat rooms pick up. And that when you kind of start to come into the more riskier play, if you want to take on the actual drill results, you can wait around for that. But generally at that point, I de-risk and leave some on the table for the actual binary play of whether they strike oil or hit gas or whatever the case may be. And at that point, I'm kind of de-risking and moving into another company that has got months, or that's got news flow in another kind of 8 to 12 months.
Of course. And where do you get your data from, out of curiosity? Because I actually had a friend, he used to write for oil price. And I used to always use that as like my main resource when, you know, keeping track of prices and everything.
Yeah.
Did you have kind of any kind of specific go-tos that you'd be keeping your eye on, or like have any recommendations for Two Blokes listeners if they want to trade this particular commodity, of like where they could get good information from?
Well, I guess my experience is, because I worked in the oil and gas industry. So I lived and worked in Aberdeen for 4 years, and I studied in Aberdeen University, so it's a real hub of information in terms of what companies are out there. But, you know, there's a couple of good things. You can see what companies, one area to look at would be looking at what companies have newly IPO'd. And, you know, there's a lot of good websites out there. I use Vox. It's good for, it gives you an overview of what IPO companies are available. And then it's really a case of just doing your research and seeing what their timelines are. I also use the likes of Twitter, any website that's out there. Generally speaking, any oil and gas websites that are out there, you can kind of get an idea of what companies are in the market, what their plans are. And then it's just a case of going on to the likes of the LSE chat boards and just looking at the RNS information. And
of course,
deriving the information yourself to see, you know, what their expected timelines are, and just sitting back. There's no easy way with it. You've got to do the research to try and find out what companies are about. I've been quite fortunate in that I've worked in that space, and there's a lot of activity around kind of commentary for announcing of rigs, tendering for jobs, and stuff like that. So I've been fortunate in that. Well, you know, there's lots of avenues out there to see, you know, those timelines. So if I could give any advice, it would probably be to check out those newly IPO companies, and maybe go on to, I think Vox is a good app. It's a good platform. It kind of gives you an idea of the different companies that are out there, and you can kind of start to configure timelines yourself through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, when it comes to the markets, like, knowledge is power, you know, making sure that you just, like you said, research. And of course, that's going to take time. I think too many people decide to just kind of jump into things without putting in the proper amount of research, dedicating the time, making sure they understand what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you had any kind of particular, I guess, you know, I mean, with oil especially, like, you can see a lot of volatility.
Yeah.
you know, especially when it goes on, and the different political and economic events that can just so greatly affect oil. Have you had any kind of particular trades that really stood out, like a good time trade or a bad time trade or anything?
Yeah, I've had a few good ones, and I've definitely had some bad ones. And I think the whole thing about it is it's just trying to limit your exposure to it. Obviously, there was a huge oil crash in 2013, 2014. The price of oil fell from what $120 a barrel down to $26 a barrel. So
yeah, what was the cause of that again?
That was just it. There was supply and demand, really. You know, there was the U.S. fracking came in, so the U.S. announced that they were going to be fully they're able to supply their own oil. So you know, at one point the U.S. were importing nearly 12 million barrels a day to themselves, and yeah, it just came a point through fracking that they didn't need to import anymore. They were completely self-sufficient. So fracking took over. They then became an exporter. The Saudi Arabia didn't start to reduce its output, and naturally enough, there just became an oil glut. And as a result, oil prices fell dramatically.
Of course, yeah.
And it's kind of fracking, I'd say, was one of the main drivers for that, because it could come on stream really quickly. It was, at the time, it was quite cheap to produce, and America not being one of the OPEC countries, they basically just produce and they kind of oversupplied the market. So that was a big driver. And also, I think the economic downturn has had its effect as well in terms of industry. China slowed down slightly, and you know, all those things are drivers on that price.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the future of, you know, when it comes to, I guess, more renewable energy resources, you know, versus, commodities such as oil and gas? Like, what do you think kind of is going to be happening now in down the road in the next couple of years? Like, do you have any predictions yourself?
Well, I think, like, I'm all for renewable energy. I think it's, you know, it's hugely important as part of, say, a vibrant energy mix. But, you know, the likes of natural gas and petroleum, I think I was reading an article this morning, like, you know, the aviation industry is 100% based on oil and gas, you know,
entirely dependent.
And you've got things like, even to this today, like our transport systems, I think 85% of it's driven off petroleum. In Ireland this summer, 90% of our electricity came from natural gas because of the weather. The climate this summer has been so nice that our wind turbines, which once supplied 35% of our electricity needs, couldn't supply that gas. So, you know, I'm all for development in terms of renewables and you know, seeing that come true. But until such time as that gap can be filled, I think we still have a huge reliance on oil and gas.
Yeah, I didn't know that about the 90%, or even consider that how you know, the good weather would, so I guess, adversely affect the likes of wind turbines and everything.
It's a huge factor. You know, I mean, we can't store that energy that comes from wind turbines. So effectively, once they stop running, in terms of you know, good weather conditions, you're kind of left stumped for energy. So we had a massive pull on the CARB gas fields for those 3 months, and you know, without that, we would have been, I think we also had to draw from the likes of Russia and across from the UK as well. So I know there are calls for you know, doing away with oil licensing outside of Ireland, and I'm sure there's probably something similar in the UK. But again, it's not going to be sustainable. I think our energy needs up until 2030 are actually growing, with economies growing, populations growing. Until such time as we can find something, I don't know if it's hydrogen, I'm not sure what it is yet, but we need to do something, because we can't cover the country in wind turbines either. Obviously, we'll see stuff like the tidal stuff will all start to come true. But in terms of operational costs with them, it's huge. So there's got to be something more. I'm sure it's there. It'll be there in the future. But I'm still, you know, I'm probably biased in some respects because I come from a oil background. But
of course, yeah.
I still just can't see. I can't see.
You have a deep understanding of it as well, you know, Jeremy. I mean, this is like you've been involved with the industry, but you're also very aware of why it's so important and like how our societies have developed and are entirely dependent on this. I mean, like we can turn to our boy Elon Musk help lead us to a brighter future, but I mean, it's not there yet. You know, I mean, there's no point of putting the cart before the horse. You know, technologies need to be developed.
Exactly. And like, I think people have to be aware as well. Like, look around you, like wherever you are right now. If you look around that room, there's petroleum products that make up everything. So, you know, we need to try and step away from that if at all possible. Like, you know, it's in everything. It's in plastic. It's in Elon Musk's cars, whether he likes it or not. The fabric of oil and gas is there, and we don't have anything to replace that yet. So I think the best thing we can do is, you know, try and reduce our carbon footprint as best as possible. I think natural gas is a good way of doing that, trying to support that, move away from, you know, using coal-powered plants, create our energy, use cleaner energy like gas, and you know, hopefully we can use carbon capture and storage as well, and that can be brought in. I think there's lots of developments that will come in to help support that. I think there's a lot to be done in terms of evolution of energy and to support a green energy environment.
Absolutely.
That's kind of my views on it. And I work in the renewable space as well. I kind of work with wind turbines. So, you know, I see those, I get those. I just can't
see both sides.
As funny as it sounds, I think in some ways it's just unsustainable to cover countrysides in wind turbines to create energy for, you know, they can't produce all the time. So we need to find some way of storing that. Maybe Elon Musk's, you know, power cell batteries or the power wall batteries will be something that we can use. And I also see there's electrolysis through hydrogen that we can probably start to bring in. So I think all these things are great. And I think oil and gas definitely has to be part of that mix as well until such time we find something that can take over.
Of course. And apologies for the pun, but fracking hell. Sounds like we're definitely going to be more dependent on, you know, the I guess more natural resources than people be willing to admit. And when it comes to, like, you mentioned fracking and how that greatly affected things over with the kind of oil price, natural gas rather, sorry, back in 2013 2014, and has there been any talks of kind of introducing that to the UK and Ireland, do you know? Because I feel like there's been a lot of backlash out over it, you know, with some, I have seen some ridiculous documentaries on it.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they were called, but like, you know, I've seen there is a lot of negativity surrounding with the likes of fracking. And I wasn't sure if that was kind of on the horizon for the UK and Ireland.
Yeah, well, I think like fracking has been used for a long time offshore. It's just a way of perforating a reservoir effectively. So, in a sense, it's not really a new technology. It's more so there's been a huge ban onshore. There's a lot of local authorities that are don't want it. They don't want to see it happen. In fact, even any sort of onshore drilling at the moment in the UK and Ireland is pretty much not getting the go ahead because of kind of protest, and it's being delayed. There's a lot of companies kind of suffering with that at the moment. That in itself is kind of it's a measure to kind of put a lot of these oil companies off even trying to apply for licenses, because there's obviously a lot of negative press around fracking. A lot of it you can't believe. Some of it you probably can believe. I'm not going to, I won't go into it. My personal view on it is I can't see the big issue of it. I've looked at some of the reports on, you know, where you see people turn on their taps in America and gas comes through. I think that's a bit outrageous.
I'm taking that with a pinch of salt. Yeah. You know, it seems a bit ridiculous. And I think a lot of things have been debunked.
Exactly.
You know, about those reports and everything. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I guess whatever we can do anyway, just like you were saying, to anticipate the growing population, the energy demands of the future. I mean, as long as we're going down every avenue that we possibly can, like, it should be absolutely fine. And when it comes to current oil prices, I mean, you know, is there kind of much going on at the moment, or are you keeping an eye on any investments or trades currently?
Yeah, well, what we're at, I think today's is $74 a barrel Brent crude. It's a good, I think the price it's at now is a good price for everyone. And I think the industry itself has started to look at, stopped looking at how many barrels they can produce, but kind of concentrated on what price, you know, what it's kind of just possibly a move away from kind of getting as much oil out onto the market as possible to let's hold back slightly, let's bring projects on in a bit more of a conservative manner rather than, you know, just pumping out as much projects as possible. So that in itself should see the oil price stabilize around the $70 to $80 a barrel, I'd say, range. I think collectively everybody's looking at what happened in 2014 and saying, we don't want to go back.
Yeah.
I think I'm hoping that there will be stability around this range, because even at that, nobody wants oil prices to go too high either, because we don't want to, you know, our cost of living goes up. So I'm pretty comfortable with this range. And I think at this range, it makes a lot of projects viable again. And we should start to see that kind of trickle back into the industry. We're starting to see it now. There's a lot of more projects coming back online. The UK's, you know, the Aberdeen in itself is picking up significantly. So, you know, all the front end design and drilling is happening again. And that kind of trickles back then towards the contracting side of things, the subsea infrastructure, the developments of platforms and all that in about 3 years' time. So going to start to see that cycle come in again. Yesterday that Chevron are bringing back in their Rosebank project, which is off the Shetlands. So that's a big development that was put on hold back in 2013. So that's, you know, that's a good sign when you see the majors coming back in with big investment, big capital expense. So I think we're going to start to see that happen. There's a couple of companies in Ireland at the moment. Providence Resources, they're starting to, well, they're potentially going to move into a period of development soon. They've got an appraisal well, Barry Row Field. It's actually Ireland's first commercial oil discovery field. So, you know, I'm hoping that will move along just for in terms of benefit for Ireland, but also for an Irish oil company, it would be great to see them develop. I'm pretty positive about the future.
Perfect, Gerard. When it comes to, like, even just a bit more on, I guess, how you kind of came to where you are, when it comes to what you do and your knowledge behind oil and gas, what was it you actually originally studied? I think you mentioned you studied in Aberdeen. And have you ever done any education or anything on trading itself or investing?
I actually haven't, no. I think for me, the one way I always learned was just by opening a position, taking a position. I think it's the best way to learn about oil and gas, about trading, because as soon as you start to lose money, you really start to value what you're doing.
So learning by losing.
I think that's how I first kind of stepped into it, which is probably not a good thing, but thankfully it was only small amounts. But yeah, it was really that. It was just, I think the one thing I find about trading is there's so many sharks out there. There's so many pump and dump merchants. It's a shady industry to be in from a private investor's perspective. So you need to be really careful with who you listen to, and, you know, what advice you're paying for, because it can be a murky industry.
Absolutely. And do you have any kind of personal experience of that? Because, I mean, I speak to people on a daily basis, Jer, you know, who've had those sorts of problems, you know, like they've lost life savings just because they're dealing with nefarious companies and everything. I mean, did you have kind of any personal experience down that?
No, thankfully I haven't. I've never fallen into the trap of, you know, buying into something on hype, really. I think how I spoke to you about how my strategy works around sitting back into a pocket of where it's just quiet and waiting for the news to kind of come. Initially what I started to do was go straight for the the news period. And what you'd find at that point is, you know, when the hype is all there, you've got guys who are really starting, you know, really pumping the market with positive news and, you know, prices that are just outrageous, pumping market caps from, say, 50 million pounds. And they're talking about prices that are 3, 4, 5-fold without any sort of results. That's kind of when it gets where you kind of start to pull in the kind of beginner investors, get caught up in the hype, and, you know, obviously greed's a bad thing as well. And shares can just be pumped, and you kind of find people get in at that stage, and that's when you typically start to lose money because you bought in at the peak. I do a small bit of technical trading, and, you know, I'll never invest in a stock when the relative strength index is above 70. And
okay,
if you look at that as a correlating factor, when these companies are in news rich periods and the share price is being really hyped and really pumped, generally speaking, the relative strength index is up around 70, 80, 90. It's spiking really high, and it's, you know, they're trying to pull in investors, or, you know, trying to bring in new investors. And generally speaking, what's happened is the market's just selling into that, and naturally enough, the share price should sometimes come back down. So I have been burnt by that in the past. Mm-hmm. So I've learned to stay away from that, and again, just stick to that strategy of just get in while it's quiet and sit back.
And out of curiosity, let's say hypothetically,
yes,
if you were starting again tomorrow,
yeah,
and knowing all you know now,
yeah,
what would you do differently?
What would I do differently? I think understanding the fundamentals of a business is probably the key for me, because technical trading is great, but it should be done in correlation. For me, in my opinion, it should be done in correlation, in combination with knowing the fundamentals of a business. So looking at the market cap of a company, you know, looking at how many shares they have an issue, understanding, you know, how much skin in the game do the directors have? You know, what percentage of the company is in free float? Generally speaking, if the directors hold a high percentage of the company and they pay themselves modest salaries, it's generally a good starting point when looking at a company. And again, looking at how many shares are in issue. So those would be things that I probably, looking back at a younger self, I would have said, you know, focus on those, because they're kind of dead giveaways of whether a company is going to be successful or what way the management are driving the company. Generally speaking, in these oil kind of small cap oil and gas companies, it's highly risky. So you've got to, I guess, mitigate against that by understanding the business as best you can and the market mechanics, you know. So those would be kind of the key areas I would look at, kind of skin in the game from the directors, and how many shares in issue, and, you know, what the prospects are for the company, what's the environment around that company, whether they're offshore, onshore, where they're based, like we spoke about earlier, geopolitical, if they're in if they're in the UK, or if they're in Iraq, or if they're in Iran, you know, it's all hugely important.
Brilliant, Jer. And I think we'll actually wrap things up on that note. Thank you so much for coming on, buddy. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to yourself. And honestly, I think you've given so much great lessons and advice there. Definitely Two Blokes listeners are going to find a lot of resources from this chat, you know, to kind of hopefully improve their own trades and improve their own knowledge.
Yeah, look, it's thanks for having me on. It's just my opinion. I'm sure there's people who can offer a lot more there as well. It's just what I've learned from experience over the years. So, it's great to be on a chat.
There are some great pearls of wisdom there, Jaron. I really appreciate
it. Thanks.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers. All right.
And that was Jared Murray. It was an absolute pleasure speaking with him there. Has a lot of experience when it comes to trading different commodities like oil and gas, and had a lot of nuggets of wisdom. So really enjoyed talking with him. I hope you guys enjoyed it too, and you get to take something away from it, especially all of you there who are trading currently in oil and gas. So thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode 113, and we'll be back soon.